Blog Talk Radio.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you guys. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you guys. You know we have to find a way to bring some loving here today. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Happy, blessed Sunday to everyone. And I pray that everyone's family and friends made it safely through these holidays. I know some people call them holidays, but I just pray that everyone was safe out there and that you enjoyed your family. Today, we have a very interesting show for you. We're going to really be breaking down the Citizens Land Development Cooperative and letting you become more aware of the legislation that was passed in the state of Missouri. It's what you hear us talk about all the time, and we have provided, you know, details here and there. But today we're going to actually explain to you what that bill turned into law consist of and why we have such an urgency to get this law passed, you know, nationwide. Before I turn it over to our brother and co-host, Gene Gordon, I want to say this. People, if we are not waking up to the economic crisis that is taking place in our country today, right now, as we speak. In the next 90 days to 180 days, you're going to find yourself in a real bind, because when the powers that be start talking recession, at any time that we are engaged in war, whether it's directly or indirectly, it poses a problem for us. It poses a problem for the people who say they're middle class, which there is no middle class. It certainly causes a problem for people who are living at or below the poverty line. So let me paint a very realistic picture for you. The food prices, the gasoline prices, the utility prices, the clothing prices, everything that you're complaining about today is going to escalate even more. And you're going to have to make a determination on whether the money that you have is going to sustain you. You know, some people are already working two jobs, and sometimes the two jobs is just getting you across the line. So, people, we need to pay attention to this information, because if our government can supply a foreign country like Ukraine $80 billion to fight a war, then what about the war on poverty right here? And what about the demand that we need to make right here about the war that we're facing? So I'm going to turn it over to Brother Gene. Brother Gene, you're going to have to host for about 10 minutes. All the lines are open, but I have to make an emergency call to my family. So just hold tight, and I'll be back. But you got it.
Yes. Can you hear me? Good evening.
I can hear you. Yes. Carolyn Nye's on.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. I'm Dean Gordon. I'm going to be explaining and going through what the Citizen Land Development Cooperative, what it is, what it's not, and I'm going to talk about why St. Louis be the model, and then lastly I'll speak about the most important question, where would the money come from to do such a development? But the Citizen Land Development Cooperative is exactly what the what is called in the title. It is an opportunity for land development owned collectively by the citizens. When I land development, we're talking about the infrastructure within our communities. And Citizen Land Development Cooperative is designed to empower economically every citizen with an equal ownership share of productive land. Citizen Land Development Co-op provides a self-sustaining way to finance community development and to combat the systemic problems of poverty, you know, racism and related problems throughout the city and state. Now, the Citizen Land Development Co-op, it's a citizens governed. You know, it's governed by the citizens. It's an opportunity where the citizens can be engaged and totally involved in community land planning, meaning that the citizens have the opportunity to be involved in what is needed in their community, what's missing. You know, here in St. Louis, we have a food desert. We need grocery stores and housing, but you know, affordable housing, not based on welfare, Section 8 vouchers, but it's a way to actually rebuild a community for its housing and give the citizen the opportunity to own the home. And let me say, it's not based on any past savings. In layman's terms, Citizen Land Development Co-op is the way of turning everybody, the poorest man on the corner, the homeless, into landlords, you know, of the land leases. But it's also a way to, you know, community land planning and development enterprise to encourage a just, free, and non-monopolistic market economy where homes, enterprises, rentable spaces, and technologies built upon the land are broadly owned by the workers and the citizens of that community. So it is an opportunity where you can develop the community and you, the citizens, actually own it. Now, what we see in most times in our communities, we see huge developments go on, but nobody ever stops to ask the three important questions. Who owns it? Who controls it? You know, and who will pay for it? And we've got development going on in our communities that is not empowering anybody, but the private investors and the developers are getting, you know, richer, you know, based on our demographics. So with the Citizen Land Development Co-op, this law was signed in, if the legislation was signed into law back on June 30th, it became official law on August 28th here in the state of Missouri by Republican Governor Mike Parson. And we all know Missouri is a red state. But the Citizen Land Development Co-op being passed into law, it's never been done in the history of America or the history of the world, where you can redevelop a community and the citizens have an equal voting share right in the development of our of their community. And when we talk about development, we're talking about roads, bridges. We're talking about total infrastructure, and I'm going to have Brother Dawood to go into forest infrastructure a little further in the conversation, but total rebuilding of community, you know, cooperative grocery stores, cooperative, and we need to start strengthening the cooperative movement. Cooperative means that collectively, you know, poverty, as I said last week, poverty is not an individual issue. It is a collective issue. Homelessness and hopelessness is not an individual issue. It is a collective issue. So with a cooperative, a citizen land development cooperative, it's an opportunity for everyone to become a landlord and have total stake in their community. Now, the CLC will generate income from land use leases, like when you, I'm in St. Louis, and if you look around in a community where you see big warehouses being set up, you know, big buildings being built, well, they're owned by a particular investor, and they build those infrastructure or those buildings, and they lease it out to corporations to lease these buildings to run their manufacture or their warehousing or whatever. But under the Citizen Land Development Co-op, we will find a geographical area where within that community there will be a business district corridor, and we'll build such buildings and warehouses. If you look at Amazon, 500,000 square feet warehouses, we'll build the same thing. And as corporations, we want to find ways to attract corporations back into the urban city to run, preferably to set up as ESOP corporations. And what an ESOP is employee stock ownership plan. And nothing has been developed or implemented besides the Citizen Land Development Co-op since the ESOP laws were signed into legislation. I think that happened back in 1965. But under the ESOPs, that allows employees and workers to become owners. But now under the Citizen Land Development Co-op, it allows the citizens to become owners. So we'll build a business district corridor like that, develop that, and try to attract, you know, renewable energy companies, preferably to move back into the community. They rent that space to operate out of, and they'll be leasing that space from the citizens. So the citizens now become landlords, and they have a second income for consumption, you know, for their consumption needs. And also you build a district within the community for housing, where that's under our home equity corp, where rather than building affordable housing based on welfare and Section 8 vouchers where the residents never become owners, well, under the Home Equity Corporation, we'll build housing. We're talking to a manufacturer who manufacture homes where they just come and the house is totally built. It's manufactured, totally already built, and they just come play, not a modular home. It's sort of like a modular home, but more well built around sustainability, and place the home in the community. The citizen move into the house, pay a rent, and after a certain period of time, not 30 years, they pay their rent and they become owners of the home. They have the actual deed of the house without putting down a huge down payment that's based on past savings and not be, you know, strapped by a 30-year mortgage. Now, that's the Citizen Land Development Co-op. We'll be able to build grocery stores, new roads, new bridges, and the citizens own it. So that's what the Citizen Land Development Co-op is. Why St. Louis? You know, St. Louis has a generation of racist laws and practices shadowed the metropolitan region as segregated places. you know, St. Louis is still segregated south of Delmar, north of Delmar. There's no development going on north of Delmar. Most of the development going on south of Delmar. But this is a way where the citizens can actually have equal state in planning, owning what goes in their communities. Under the citizen land, now where would the money come from? Well, the money would come from, let's say at a development like that's needed in North St. Louis costs about $3 billion. Well, the money comes from the Federal Reserve. As Queen was mentioning that the government is sending $7 billion to help Ukraine fight a war, well, the government of the United States does not have $70 billion in cash. So what they do is they go out and the Federal Reserve prints that money out of thin air, lend it to government, and then the government sends it to aid Ukraine. Well, under the Citizen Land Development Cooperative, what it does is the Citizen Land Development will obtain insured capital loans from commercial and cooperative banks to have access to the discount window of the Federal Reserve. And what I mean by discount window from the Federal Reserve, meaning that the loan from the money that will be created through the discount window of the Federal Reserve through the commercial and cooperative banks is usually at 0 to 1% interest. 0 to 1% interest. And this money that will be created will be backed up by real assets. And what I'm sharing with you is the feasibility and why the Federal Reserve can do it. It's backed up by real assets. Not only that, it will be insured, so it won't be a loss to the Federal Reserve to do that. So once the development is done, 100% of the profits from the development would go to pay off the loan immediately. So after the loan is totally paid off, then the profits will be distributed to the shareholder, which is the citizens, and it can be used as a second income to citizens. It's a way out of poverty. Here in the city of St. Louis, I ended life right there and introduced my other brother who's on the call, Dawood Muhammad. But here in the city of St. Louis and throughout other cities and urban areas, each city government have what they call a city land bank. Now, Citizen Land Development Cooperative was formerly known as Citizens Land Bank. Now, most cities
Does every city in America have that?
Yes, most cities in America have a city land bank where they have property, derelict properties and land that are owned by the city and state government. That is what you call a city land bank. They have those. Now, here in St. Louis, we have what they call the Land Reutilization Authority. That is a citizen land bank. And believe it, St. Louis was the first city in America to establish a city land bank. And all of those derelict properties, all of those properties that are owned by the government, the city and state government, it is costing the taxpayer dollars to maintain that property, to keep the grass cut, to board it up. See, I want you to understand something. Governments cannot go out and invest money into private sector growth, meaning that governments cannot go out and start building homes and rent them out to people. Governments can't do that. So the land stays dormant, and they have these tax sales. This is land and derelict properties that people have lost to not paying the taxes on it. Well, under the Citizen Land Development Co-op, what the government and city governments do preferably is to transfer all of that land to the Citizen Land Development Co-op, which then totally wipes out the taxpayers' burden for maintaining it. They transfer it over to the Citizen Land Development Co-op. We go out there and develop it. building sustainable, safe, and just communities, and we, the citizens, own it. Now, the Federal Reserve has the powers to do that. They're printing money out of thin air that's not backed up by anything, but government debt. So the Federal Reserve has the powers to do such things. And but under the Citizen Land Development Co-op, that's what we're about to do. You know, this is a way of bringing ownership of real capital to the poorest of the poorest. And it's a way out of poverty. And that's what we have to do. It's a more innovative way. I know it's never been heard of, but we have to come up with innovative approaches to solve the systemic problems that's facing our communities. And the Citizen Land Development Co-op is a vehicle for us to obtain ownership of our communities. I know many of us would like to become landlords, but we don't have the money to pass savings to revitalize the community and things like that. Well, this is a way that we can do it without being based on past savings and investment and going into debt to do so. But I'm going to stop right there, and I want to introduce Brother Dawood Muhammad. Brother Dawood, are you there? Dawood, are you on the call?
Yes, I am. I'm on the phone.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum. How are you?
Oh, excellent. Well, alaikum salam. I'm very honored, and it's very great to be a part of this discussion, because it's long overdue.
Can you just give me your take on some of the things that I've mentioned and how important it is that we begin to take an approach and really do something to end poverty, and how, you know, renewable energy and, coming up with real solutions to solve this problem of poverty, racism, and fight-or-flight of conflict.
Well, it reminds me of a T-shirt that got my attention some years ago, and the gentleman had it, and it was just a few simple words, and it went like this: own or be owned.
Mm.
And so when I looked at that T-shirt, it grabbed my attention, and I said, you know what? I cannot never own that T-shirt unless I buy it. And once I own it, then it's mine. But then I thought about it, it's property that would belong to me. So I think that what ownership is the key to our way of eliminating poverty. See, so I'm looking at this thing in a way that, like right now, we look at infrastructure. I think that we have to be able to educate the masses of the people to understand what infrastructure really means. When we talk about a society or a community, we're not a colony. We want to be a community that owns the land that they live in, you know. And so, but there have to be new forms of economic systems put into place. We can't use a 17th century or 18th century economic system model, because it won't work. Okay, we have to be able to change this thing to a point where everyone is involved and it's inclusive. We can't talk about a democracy or can't talk about a free market if we exist under a monopoly. So this is where we end up. When you own something, then you're creating competition, because of the fact that if you just have a group of people, a few members on the board of a corporation owning everything, then all of a sudden, you know, you're not really free. So I feel that the only way that we could be free and have true freedom is that we must own where we live. And that's where I'm at.
Yeah,
and when I say that we own where we live, I'm looking at it in terms of the infrastructure as well. Thank you.
Yeah, you said something. You said something that's very important. You said this is supposed to be a free market society, a free market system, but yet there is a monopoly taking place. And when you have a free market or free enterprise system, it's the ability to compete within the market. But what's done among our people is they're limited us to the opportunity to compete in a free market system because of you know, wealth quality and as you said, because of the monopolies that's taking place. So with the Citizen Land Development Co-op, do you feel that this is a way to begin to, and you said something else that was very important, you know, you said freedom. You know, we fight for freedom, justice, and equality, but when a man is dependent upon another man for his subsistence, he is not free. So,
amen.
With the Citizen Land Development Co-op, can you just share with the listening audience your thoughts on how important this is and how historical it is and the opportunity that we as a people should begin to take advantage and support this, because I strongly feel this is all we got so far.
Well, the thing is that if we have to first have a paradigm shift in thinking in terms of ownership, meaning that in terms of owning where we live. Now this is very critical because of the fact that how you look at targeted examples of what we're looking at in the community. Everyone needs to look into their community when they walk out their door and start looking at what makes up their community. They start looking at their community and they look at the roads, the sidewalks. Then they start looking at the lights. And then they start looking at when they turn power on, the lights come on. Then they start looking at when it get cold, they turn the heat on, and when it get too hot, they turn the air on. This is called infrastructure, but there's so much to the infrastructure because people have to learn how to turn that light on. And that means that when we have to tap into the imagination of the people to be more creative, because time brings about change. And just like climate change come about that brings about a change, then we have to be able to create a system that can hinge against this climate change that has an impact on us from the way we eat, from the way that we live, to everything that we can imagine. So the thing is that we have to begin to tap into our imagination or imagine a nation and what does it consist of, that infrastructure, what it is. So we start looking at the street lights. All right, now back in the day in St. Louis, which was very popular, there was a street called Gaslight Square. And, you know, gaslight, they used to have lights, but the lights was provided by the gaslight. Now, that's back in the 18th century. It might have gone further than that, but we're looking at 18th to the 19th century. Now, then all of a sudden, we start looking at electricity, and we came up with the discovery of the light bulb, and then we end up with lights. But they called it the Gaslight Square. Now, here we got lights, which is electrical. And then they use coal to be able to generate electricity by the steam to turn the magnets to create electricity. So now we provide electricity. So now we end up with inventions and appliances that we use. And so now we know that we have an industry that we can manufacture these products as the population grows, it creates a demand for, like, washing machines so that your clothes could stay clean, a refrigerator so your food could stay preserved, a hospital so that the people, when they get sick, they have a place to get well. A school so that people can become educated to be able to carry on and create new innovative ideas to maintain a society in which all the population can benefit from. So, but now here is what we're presenting is a new innovative approach, meaning that now we're looking at the technology is antiquated and outdated. For example, everything that we look at, from the coal-fired power plants to everything that you can imagine, it needs to be replaced. The sewer lines need to be replaced. The copper lines, or the used to be lead water lines, need to be replaced. All of this has to be replaced with something new. Well, then, all right, now we know that this is an opportunity. All right, now this opportunity presents to us that that means that we have to own what? We need to own the infrastructure. That means that we need to start with the streetlights. Now we can start looking at the new technology like solar, and we can create our own solar streetlight district. Now, when we put this technology in place, it's going to actually save the city money. The city is spending, and let me give you a better example, not only just what the city is spending, that money that they're spending, and they're giving that money straight to the utility companies, which I call is a monopoly. Mm. When we say that it's a monopoly, we're talking about the utility company is a state-run regulated monopoly. When by law you had the Standard Oil Trust, that was a monopoly. They end up creating the antitrust laws to bust that up. When you look at Marlboro, which used to be the telephone company, they bust that up. But then, all of a sudden, they even created what was called the Glass-Steagall Act. And I would love to have our esteemed guests here and other people here to talk about what is the Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall Act was something that, under the Clinton administration, that literally bust up and they dissolved, I would say, the Glass-Steagall Act that kept the banks get into the insurance companies, and the banking, and get into the stock market, and then getting into the real estate market. All of that was kind of mixing into each other, apples and oranges and pears, all mixing it all together. When what happened is, if one falls, then it's like a stack of cards; they all fall.
Yeah.
So when we start looking at these mortgages, for example, the adjustable rate mortgages began to collapse back in 2006 and 7 and 8. We start looking at all of that, but now we're looking at infrastructure where we can now take the technology. We have to replace the old with something new. And that means, for example, when we start looking at the power plants, these power plants have not been modernized in over 100 years. We've got nuclear power plants that are over 100 years old. They're like ticking time bombs. They could explode at any time because of the fact that they have never been, nothing new have been, or they haven't been upgraded or modernized. These oil refineries have not had expanded their capacity to be able to hold or maintain oil. I mean, or because they have not been modernized. And now the infrastructure that we have now, the technology for automobiles that have contributed to our health conditions and the air that we breathe, the food, the water that we drink, the water we drink, the food that we eat. We now need a new infrastructure that is modernized, and that infrastructure is first had to be understood by the politicians. When you ask that question, what does infrastructure mean, they don't have a clue. I found that I've been in meetings with educators that do not even have a clue about what the definition. They give some abstract understanding of what infrastructure is, but they don't know what it means. They don't understand what infrastructure is. Just like, and then when we talk about infrastructure, you have to talk about the economic system that accompanies the infrastructure. So, in other words, when we start looking at the lighting system, the street lights, why come we could create our own solar security street light district and end up saving 80% of the city's budget what they pay just in lights? Let me give you something else better than that to look at. The utility company, for example, right now in St. Louis, do annually $5 billion a year. Now we're wondering why we got poverty, because now they keep constantly going up on the utility rates because the technology is antiquated. We need a technology that can withstand the climate change and everything else that goes along with it. If an earthquake strike right now, everything has been outsourced to other countries because of greed. Look at Missouri right now. If I'm thinking correctly, the governor or just look at whoever was the governor at that time, literally had sold the farmland to China. Then my question is then, wait a minute, what are you talking about? You got all of the United States is up for sale. So then you're trying to tell me that what, we're going to be getting our food from China? How can you be getting your food from China when China is 6,000 miles away? The only way that I can see it is they're going to own the land in which you grow your own food on. Because all of our greed, out of Greece, they turn around and sell the land to foreign countries. But and I couldn't understand neither about the transformers. You look at the transformers. Do you know that all the transformers, someone came up with an idea to outsource all of the manufacturing base in this country? Then how do we return that manufacturing base and make that and own our own manufacturing bank base inside of our own country? This is where the ESOPs come in at, where the employees can come together and own the infrastructure where we live. So we could prevent these people who claim that they say that they believe in their country, but they can't tell me that they believe in their country when they outsource all the jobs outside of this country. And then turn around and we wonder about why we're in a food desert. You're talking, what do you mean a food desert? It's not only just a food desert. Pretty soon you've already sold the farmland to foreigners. And so, in other words, that means like they could tell you, hey, you can't get that, you can't grow nothing on this land because we own it.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about the idea about what does a infrastructure stand for. So that means that to tie it all into this conversation, because there's so much more we could add to it. But what I wanted to do is help people to first envision what is a green sustainable city. A green sustainable city is where we use alternative energy technology to be able to provide the power to run the machines. Now we're looking at the electric cars. Okay, now we're saying, okay, well, at one point they were buying cars from over in Japan because the gas mileage was better than it was before when they had all these big cars and vehicles that was gas guzzlers. Now the gas prices went up that forced the people to get away from these big cars and go to smaller cars, but then that wasn't even good enough because even with a smaller car, it was still burning gas. So now we have a new technology where we could go with electric vehicle recharging stations, that we could implement new infrastructure, whereas your own house, you don't have to. How about this idea? How about us selling a home that comes with solar, a house that comes with a car, electric car, and electrical vehicle recharging station right there inside your house? That means that all that money that you save is money that you could begin to put back into your family future. For the speech to savings for retirement and everything else that goes with it. But the way that this the Land Reinvestment Act is, it is only a serious component that need to be implemented. And what's so sad about it, it's been passed in the state of Missouri, but how many people know about it? What good is it if you did a noble thing, but you're not implementing the other processes to go with it? We have solar, but yet all of a sudden the politicians didn't know how to create the laws to make to support the alternative energy technology so they could be properly implemented in inside the communities or within the state or within the society.
I could go on and on,
but right now, just go ahead. Please, go ahead.
Can I ask a question?
Sure,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, go ahead. Can I ask a question? Yes, go ahead, sir.
Yes, my question is, this is Brother Meeshawn Daniels. Here's my question. Let's say that I understand everything that you're saying, every bit of it, and I agree with everything that you're talking about. My immediate question is, because I'm always concerned about the gross ignorance that we're currently dealing with in our demographics of people, how do we take this knowledge, this information that you specifically talking about, very eloquently, very informative, very, very solid, to say that, again, I just say I understand everything that you're saying, but we have a tremendous amount of gross ignorance among our demographics of people who spread it all over this country from the different names, different ideologies, different point of views. How do we get this, how to get that knowledge that y'all talking about down to the very minute, grossly ignorant people that we currently have right now to benefit? Because you're going to take numbers. It's going to require people to change their thinking. You're going to have to require a tremendous amount of numbers of people to buy into this. I want to understand what is the methodology to trying to get what you're talking about down to the most minute ignorance, grossly emotional ignorance, to buy into what you're saying.
Yeah, okay.
That is a wonderful question, and I have to agree. Yes, go ahead. Please go ahead, brother.
Yeah, great question, and that's a step in the process of the Citizen Land Development Co-op. Now that we've got the legislation signed into law, the first stage is creating a core group through a nonprofit organization, which is DOS for ESJ. We're putting together the core group. Now, the second stage of that is that we're going to begin to go out and educate the community, residents in the community, on the Citizen Land Development Cooperative, what it means to them, and how they can get involved. Now, a way we're going to do that is through the St. Louis Council of Community Board. And keeping in mind, the Citizen Land Development Co-op can be replicated in every urban city of America and rural area. So we're at the second stage of the Community Development Co-op. Now we got to go out and educate the community residents on the Citizen Land Development Co-op and how they can then become participants in the planning stage and things like that. So we're at the second stage of that development now. But let me go back to what Dawood was also saying. So we're at the planning stage. So that stage is now is going on to educate. And, Michonne, as you know, you've always said we have to unlearn to relearn. You know, there's a gross amount of ignorance among our people, so we have taken on one of the toughest jobs in America, and that is to educate people who have been, you know, totally miseducated. And let me jump on that, that question. Now, I'm going to say one other thing and turn it back over to Queen. Dawood said something. He said that the system that has been created is so antiquated, meaning that it's outdated. Yes, it's outdated. Even the educational system is so antiquated. And that's where we have the problems that we're faced with today, is because of the conventional thinkers and the way that we've been educated in school, which it has no significance to the change that has to take place today. But, you know, when you talk, this is under the Citizen Land Development Co-op, it is a way to conceive, design, and build a model city. And what I'm of the 21st century, as Dawood was saying, is that we can't continue to operate on an 18th century model. So we're talking about leading the way for the United States and the world toward a more hopeful, just, inclusive, and empowering future for every person throughout their lifetime. Now, we're not just talking about building or developing a community. We're talking about a safe, thriving, just, and a sustainable community. So what we're once we go out and educate the community, get them involved in the playing, then we invite in top experts from around the world, you know, scientists from NASA looking at the brownfields and how they can extract renewable energy. Dawood mentioned about the street lighting district, you know, so we're talking, this is not a really a Mickey Mouse deal, but it's going to take people in the community to really put this thing off. But we're going to seek out the most advanced physical, social, and financial technologies, and with the assistance of leaders in private, public, and nonprofit sectors, banking, unions, academia, build a life-enhancing and creative environment for all citizens and families to work and thrive. And who better to do it than the descendants of America?
May I jump in for a minute? May I jump in for a minute before you put Queen on? This is Carol Anoff from Bridgeport, Connecticut. I want to speak to something that Brother Dawood said. First thing I want to talk about for a minute, just as in addition to what he did, knowledge that he just dropped. The most important thing is educating our people as to what's going on. The infrastructure here, I live in Bridgeport, Connecticut. They got $136 million for infrastructure. So people seem to think it's fixing their highways and in the community, put every street you go down is detour. And they're giving that money to their friends, and nothing is going on in terms of infrastructure that's going to help the people. The other thing you said, I'm originally from a little small town in Georgia. The China is already buying up the farmland down there. because China wants to control our food. And I've been reading and following this, and a lot of the older people that left acres of land, I'm talking about black people that are owning 25 to 100 acres of land, are selling their land to the Chinese. So what we need to do is do more educating these people, tell them, stop this. Don't sell your land because their grandfather died. You know, and you feel that you're broke. There's three things that the system never wanted us to have. They never want us to be able to vote, never want us to be able to read, and never want us to be able to own property. That is as prevalent today as it was 100 years ago. So we need to do some mass education like what you're doing right now on this broadcast should be broadcast all over America, because a lot of people are in a slumber asleep and they don't understand what's going on. When we start waking up, some of the things that you're saying will come into fruition. But this land thing is a big deal going on in the South right now, particularly in Georgia. They're selling that land to the Chinese. Now the Chinese want to control our food in America. And because of greed, I mean, I think you used the words that because of greed, we're not paying attention to a lot of things that are going on right under our noses. The other thing I want to deal with is that infrastructure need to be defined for our people. It need to be a definition of an infrastructure. All this money that they're pouring into these communities is coming in here now. And I know it's coming into Connecticut. Every street you go down is detoured. There's a $10 million. I said to my son, we get in the car and ride around. I said that's a $10 million contract. That's a $10 million contract. They're not doing anything in terms of your definition of what realities are in terms of infrastructure. So we need to do a massive broadcast of what you did today. Enlighten the people to wake up out of this slumber. This information is very vital, what you just provided out here today. I mean, it's very chilling to me.
May I say one thing? I wanted to just add on to what you're saying and what you're reiterating. And here's the thing. What I've observed, that, listen, I actually have PhDs and MBAs on, we were in a meeting, and I said, you know what, let me try this. And I said, I asked each and every one of them, I said, what is your definition of infrastructure? Now, why am I asking that? First, let's go there right now. The reason is that President Biden came up and with an $800-something billion infrastructure bill. But yet, if you got politicians, the educational system, and you got the economic model is not set up to understand what that means. What does infrastructure mean? If the politician can't write policies if they don't understand about the applications of the technology in real time. So here we are in this situation where you got $850 billion, just like they did up under the Obama administration. Only black folks of all the other ethnic groups got their money, but we only got maybe less than 1% of anything of that money. Here it is. You got trillions of dollars that went out, yet we can't point to nothing substantive in our community that we could point to.
Well, how do we educate the community? How do we wake up this slumber sleep people?
Okay, so wait a minute. Let's have some order here, because we're going to start talking over each other in a minute. Okay,
I'm just asking a question.
Yeah, I understand. So right. If you have a question, just press 1 on your dial pad so we can come to you, because it might be other people that have a question. So I want to give the audience an opportunity, other people that are on the line, that if you have a question or a comment, press 1 on your dial pad, and then we'll be more than happy to bring you in. Your mics are open already. So just press 1, and we'll know that you have a question or a comment. And Ms. Carolyn, I wanted to answer your question in terms of how do we do this. You know, we are not too far from the days of Dr. Martin Luther King. And if you look at how and you look at why, they had to organize the way they had to organize, because number one, you can't let your enemy know what you're doing. And number two, he had to go to where the people were and meet the people where they were, spiritually, intellectually, or otherwise. So those strategies that were used back then are still sound strategies that we can use today. We've gotten lazy because social media makes it convenient. It's faster. You can reach farther places. You can reach across the water with social media. But it's nothing like somebody coming to you face-to-face, answering your questions, addressing your concerns. We have to get back to the communities. We have to get back to the churches. We have to get back to our organizations. We have to reach out to the student bodies, because that is the way we as a people have ever accomplished anything. The Civil Rights Bill was not accomplished because of a march. The Civil Rights Bill was accomplished because of a demand. And the demand came from the people. And Martin Luther King and everybody who was associated with him had to go to those people. They didn't have no emails and, you know, social media sites to post this information. It had to be church by church, block by block, organization by organization. That is still the same way that we talk to our people. And I'm going to tell you why. Because social media is so convoluted. You hear this African-American brother or sister saying this over here, this one saying this over here, this one saying all of us are lying, you know. Then they want to implement religion and culture and all these things. At the same time, everybody's starving and everybody's dying. So if we want to get this information and get them actual facts and meet them where they are and answer their questions, we have to organize. That's how we do it.
Okay, may I, since you mentioned that, let me add, highlight some more things that I have. I'm a researcher and I am an engineer. I'm an owner of Joseph Visions Technologies and Economic Development and Solar Electric Power, LLC, and Gateway Solar. The thing is, there is a number of apparatus that I want us to think about. I want everyone here to think about what I'm getting ready to say. All the other ethnic groups that come into this country, they have certain financial tools or apparatuses that they are using that we don't have access to. And what I'm saying, let me give you an example. I'm going to just name them off, and we can break them down later. One, they have dual citizenship. Two, they also, not only do they have dual citizenship, and I'm talking about, you can name whatever ethnic group that they've come from, whether they're from Mexico or where are they from China or where are they from India or if they're from Europe or from Germany or wherever they're from, they or Canada, whatever, they got dual citizenship. Even if they came from Africa, they have dual citizenship. And there are some advantages to that as well. But then on top of that, what you're looking at when you say dual citizenship, you're getting into another language, another application, which has something to do with the sovereignty rights. And I hear the word civil rights, and that's where civil rights is only limited. It only limits that person's capacity, especially if you're living up under a colony instead of living as a community. And what I'm saying by that is that what we're really looking at is human rights. Is what we. This is where Martin Luther King was heading our people to, because he did say that he felt that he was leading his people into a burning house, and which is what is happening right now. When the U.S. dollar, which is the second thing, well, what other things that these other ethnic groups are enjoying is called currency exchange. That means that they could come in this country and they can work and make money, but then they have a Mexican bank they can put into. If you're from China, they got money that they're transferred to China. If you were from India, they take the money and they transfer it to India bank. And that way that money has a goes further in their countries, and they can make changes and rapidly catch up. What it was. If you go back in 1960s and 70s, 50s, you'll see that they wasn't as advanced as they were, but just in 20, 30, 40 years, they have caught up economically, caught up technologically, and what they did was in the school system, they start teaching the children what they're doing right now. They're teaching, coding. They're teaching coding to children at a young age. Okay, computer code.
I understand that, but okay. That's not what I was saying. I was talking about the strategy.
I was just only talking about. I was just trying to identify certain things regarding I was talking about was dual citizenship and the currency exchange, and I'm talking about when I say currency exchange is that, for example, are we engaging our money to engage in banking systems, creating banking systems in Mother Africa like the Chinese have in China? And yet, do you know, I sat at a table while working on a project to put solar on a base. And I actually designed the whole entire system. And then what happened is when I sat at that table, I'm the only, yet all the information I had, I provided to them about how to go about doing it to bypass the boiler. So I came back with solar technology with that whole entire system. But guess who they brought to the table? They brought to the table a guy from China. And they brought him to the table, and they tried to classify him as a minority. But yet here we have been neglected, but yet they come into the country off of the backs of our hard work and labor to break down the barriers so that they could come in and sweep up underneath the feet all of the benefits that we haven't yet even achieved.
Okay.
Can I jump in there?
Okay, let's get back to the subject. Because this is the thing.
Okay, well, this brother wanted to speak. The brother wanted to speak. Could you have him speak? I wanted to hear what he had to say.
But let me moderate my show, okay? Because we have a topic of
discussion. You're sounding very, very aggressive. I don't understand. I don't understand the conversation.
We're talking over each other, and nobody gets heard. That's the
problem. I apologize. I'm not used to this conversation. Thank you very much for your time. May God bless you all. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you.
You know, I can't deal with control freaks, and I'm not going to compromise the structure of respect and programming, because everyone has something to say. And everybody will take you off topic and will take over your program if you allow that to happen. We have a specific subject matter that we're trying to educate people on, but when people want to implement their experiences and all this kind of stuff, all their history, it takes away time. This is a timed event. So the subject of this show was Citizens Land Development Cooperative is law. And we want you to understand what that law is, how you can benefit from that law. We already know what our history is and what it has been. We know how we've been mistreated, how we've been abandoned, how we've been left out of the process. So now we're talking about how can we get in the process. So, Brother Gene, do you want to redirect back to
and thanks a lot for doing the
CLDC?
Thanks a lot for that. You know, Queen always she just don't get offended. Somebody has to keep it in order. But, you know, the Citizen Land Development Co-op is a way of repairing, renewing, and owning our community. Now, the brother said something about, how do we get it out to the people? You know, we have to promote strategic alliance with the people, by the people, and for the people to establish equal justice, rights, and opportunity from the poorest to the richest. Now, somebody mentioned a human right. This is the fundamental human right. You gave us access to the vote, which don't mean nothing today, through the ballot, but you didn't give us equal access to capital ownership. And this is a way that we can begin to get capital ownership into the hands of the people. And as he said, it's an innovative way. And who else best to do it than a people who has been, you know, disenfranchised, coming up with a new way? And he talked a little bit about, you know, the economic and the monetary powers. Well, we have to change and reform the monetary system. That is a way that we have to really, really begin to look at and address these issues. You know, it's beyond pointing out the history and impacts of structural racism. You know, we have to just come with real solutions. And this legislative Citizen Land Development Cooperative is a step in the right direction in really getting the, you know, ownership into the hands of the people, of the community. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And Brother Gene, if you would, I want you to kind of really make clear about what the CLDC is not, because we did a broadcast on that, and a lot of people may think that, you know, that this is something else other than what it really is, because, you know, this is not socialism or communism or anything of like that. It is, we didn't govern this or design this based on the current economic system. And so with the current economic system, there are certain things that come into play. And so we want to make people aware of the fact that there are certain things that they are not to get the CLDC confused with. Can you give us a few pointers on what the CLDC is not?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. Number one, the CLDC is not a nonprofit community investment corporation. And the listeners, you can go and look at Community Investment Corp, and that's something that Bernie Sanders designed back in 1975, and they just, you know, coming back out with it. But the Community Investment Corporation, they say that it's owned by the community, but the community, the citizens, don't really have a real stake ownership in a Community Investment Corporation. They say it's owned by the community because it is something that nonprofit organizations are doing. That is not what Dots for ESJ is doing with the Citizen Land Development Co-op. Community investment corporations are actually owned by the nonprofit organizations, and you know, nonprofits are not owned by a particular individual. They call it a community organization. So don't get confused by those words that they use, community-owned. No, it's owned by a nonprofit organization. And we see that popping up in our communities a lot, where a nonprofit organization will go out and build a community, you know, affordable housing, Section 8. And what they do in order to get that funding from government, and it's taxpayers' money, but in order to get that funding from government, they use the term affordable housing. Now they can tap into government funding. But usually what happens is, and they have to be committed to doing that for the next 5 years. Well, after 5 years, they turn it into a private organization. As Cornel West said, you find a problem, you privatize it, and then you monetize it. So Citizen Land Development Co-op is not a community investment corporation. It is not a community land trust. That's what's popping up in our communities today. Community land trusts, where they're owned by just a select few at the top, but no ownership goes into the hands of the residents. It's not a land foundation or any other legal vehicle in which ownership of land, natural resources, and basic community infrastructure are owned collectively, where no one has a property state or state monopoly. You know, this, the Citizen Land Development Co-op, is an innovative way to combat all of that. You know, it's not a land monopoly owned or controlled by a small elite or local outside investor. And, you know, that's what's happening in our communities, is that outside investors and developers are partnering up with politicians under this TIF funding. We got into that and talked about tax increment financing, but they're using our demographics to get this funding. It's not an amateur or unstructured approach to land development or managed by a committee. It is not a vehicle for owning or financing local enterprise competing in the marketplace. You know, but you know, these are things that have not empowered, and it's going all over our communities every day. All it is with community investment corporations, community land trusts, all that is, believe it, listeners, is modern-day projects. That's all it is. modern-day projects, and it's not empowering or bringing capital ownership into the hands of the citizens who live there. So Citizen Land Development Cooperative is an alternative, a better innovative way to combat that dilemma, and it's a way to begin to end gentrification. Thanks.
Can I jump in now? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, can I jump in now?
Sure. You have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I have intentionally came to listen quietly and to pay attention to what's going on. And Gene, and I just want to say to you that I'm hearing, and like as I said earlier, I'm hearing and understand everything that you're saying, and I believe that it has a lot of tremendous value. So here's my question or my statement. Have you, because I'm always concerned about trying to reach the grossly ignorant of our people, okay? So I'm going to ask this question of you and see if you have you read the contract with Black America, that says the Black contract with America, the Black contract with by Ice Cube. Because the reason I'm asking this question, because that contract that Ice Cube put together reached and was read by both political parties. Now, if you're concerned about our demographics of people, ADS, okay, or Descendants of American Slaves, and as a whole, I believe that reading that contract and implementing what you're talking about within that contract that Ice Cube has already got attention, which $500 billion was actually on the table that neither one of them, you know, and I'm not going to get into it, but $500 billion was on the table talking about people taking a look at that. I've read that thing three times, and I'm just interested. Have you read the contract with the Black contract with America that Ice Cube put together?
Yeah, I haven't read it in its entirety because when I looked at it and not having a negative view of it, it's dealing with taxpayer dollars. You know, it's, as I said, we got to start asking three major questions. Where would the money come from, who would pay for it, and who would control it? We have to find more innovative ways to reduce the national debt, government deficit, so Ice Cube.
That's why I wanted you. But
yeah,
I agree with you. No, I actually agree with you. But because it did get national attention and it did get both political parties, and we are trying to get our demographics of people to take a look at something, I'm just saying that I believe that you have a very intelligent, a very specific thing that's specifically about trying to change the legislation, trying to change how things is. And in my 62 years, I never seen $500 billion attracted to both political parties and an idea of somebody actually talking to us about what's best for us. And all I'm saying is that with the intelligence of what everything y'all talking about, it behooves me to at least take a look at that and see how you can implement that you're talking about under the name, and you call it ADS contract with America, or DAS contract with America. You just flip it, change it a little bit, and implement what y'all are talking about within it, okay? And I'm just talking about rewriting it, okay? But using the terminologies that you're talking about and implement something of this nature and go peddle it and see what people say. It's just my
can we speak to that and just tell you why we won't do that? Because
it's
like going back to the same person that inflicted all of the pain and horror on you and then asking them to save you. It's the same beast. It's the same beast. And therefore, if they give you the money, then they have this degree of ownership that you will never get out from under. What we're saying is that by law, the Federal Reserve has the ability to invest in the private sector, which we are the private sector. And they're doing all of this legal counterfeiting. They did $80 billion worth of counterfeit money to Ukraine, because I don't understand how you can loan money and you got a trillion-plus dollar deficit. But they create money for bullshit. But you got a war of poverty going on right here. So that is why we would never use the approach of saying we want the taxpayers to pay for this, because even if the taxpayers pay for it, the government is going to be the one to benefit the most.
First of all, Queen, I did not say. Just for you to understand, let's be clarity. I did not say, okay, that we would use specifically the same way. I said you should implement what he's talking about, because I'm a chess player, okay? If the dominant European culture in this country created the game and created the rules, okay, then as I've learned, okay, that you must know how to play within the rules that's already there. This country has already set it up.
And then sometimes you got to break the rules, Michonne. So we're not going to go down that road.
Let me say this.
Sometimes you got to break the rules.
My approach is that, you know, even with Ice Cube, Tiff, what Tiff is doing, I read an article what he's trying to do in Georgia to end gentrification. And the key words, you have to be able to understand the wording. It said affordable housing, what Tiff is doing in Georgia, Ice Cube. What we have to do is they have to be reeducated. You know, Ice Cube came up with that system and that plan because he didn't know that there is a different and better way.
Absolutely. I'm in totally in agreement with you.
Yes. So what we have to do is get a hold of Ice Cube, Tiff, and all of them, and they have to be educated. Look, there is a better way. We cannot no longer continue to look at the constituted government to solve our issue. And why every time people and descendants of slaves, we always have to look to government? No. The Federal Reserve has the power to create money for private sector growth. I mean, nobody we're not challenging the Federal Reserve. We're saying, look, I remember Jesse Jackson back in the early 80s, he asked for some billions of dollars from government pensions to help rebuild, you know, urban communities. And they told Jesse, hey, man, you take that back to Brooklyn. But, you know, we have got to look at and stop and find a way. We have to take systemic solutions to solve systemic problems and stop coming with this conventional way of doing things, because all of that has been done does not work. So with the Citizen Land Development Co-op, this is a whole new way. It's not relying on the taxpayers. We got to find ways to reduce this national debt with this $100 billion.
I totally agree. And if you had read, I mean, I don't know if you read Norris' book, I was involved with Norris. Norris was on the edge of something way before you all this thing came about, and he was almost on the same track, and he said the United States Commerce. I was in the meetings, okay? I was involved where he had the United States Commerce people talking about the very same thing he's talking about, that we needed to create, that we needed to force this government to create revenue specifically for the descendants of American slaves And the United States commerce was created off the back of slaves. And he was specifically talking about it. But the problem was, and I'm going to go here real quickly, Mr. Noah Shelton didn't have a clear intelligence and understanding how to stay in track with that. The primary reason why I love what it is you're talking about, because Dr. Noah Shelton was right there. He just did not have this knowledge that y'all are talking about. So that's why I have a clear understanding about what y'all are talking about. I understand that because he talked about that in America's Little Black Book, how we need to change the system, how we had to go straight to the government and make them change the system that's relevant to the descendants of American slaves. So he talked about that. So that's why I can grasp what y'all are talking about. I see it. I understand it has very strong relevance to it, okay?
Yeah, and we, besides the Citizen Land Development Co-op, which the law that just got passed, we had a Senate resolution bill that was introduced asking the Congress to pass the Economic Democracy Act. So there's a resolution that hopefully she's going to reintroduce it the first of next year, is the resolution to pass the Economic Democracy Act. And what you said about Noah Shelton, he sat in a meeting and he was there, but he just didn't have the plan in place. That's the same thing that happened with Dr. Martin Luther King, is when he was headed to Washington to get our check, that was the concept, the idea,
right.
But he didn't have the plan. So if I believe, and then he was assassinated 3 weeks before going back to Washington for an economic agenda. So I believe if he'd had a chance to look at the Economic Democracy Act, which is formerly known as the Capital Homestead Act, if he had an opportunity to see that, I mean, that was it, I agree.
Yeah. I'm the one that tried to get Norris to talk to Norman way back then, but at the time, the level of intelligence, the level of openness, and I have to be honest with you, keep it 100. I didn't have a Gene Gordon on board, and my whole strategy at that time is that, and I'm still here because I would not allow us to do the work for everybody else, and then we sit on the damn back of the bus and everything, let everybody else go ahead of us once again and everything, but we do all the heavy work. I was just not on board with that and everything, doing all the damn heavy work, and then everybody else benefit from it, and then they say, oh, we got something for you, but nothing really comes for us because we did all the heavy work. So, Gene, you seem like you've done some heavy work. You've made some things happen. I'm here to just say to you, I see the relevance. I see we got a lot of work to do, but I care about the little people, bro. I care about little people and how we get them on board, because the muscle going to come from the bottom up. It ain't going to come from the top down. It's going to come from the bottom up. And until you can improve how we can get the bottom up on board to understand it, and they got to be a way, like, Michonne is the bottom up. I understand it, but we got to get it down to the and people who can really clearly understand the magnitude of what you're talking about. And that's where I'm at. And so I digress, and I appreciate everything I've heard here.
When you just said the bottom up, from the bottom up, and that's the approach that we're taking. You just described our logo. It's from the bottom up approach. We can't go from top down to approaches. It's from the bottom up approaches. My colleagues, they come up with Justice University, and it's a 20-hour course, and it is teaching all these fundamental, but it's at a academia level for professors, so we're going and bringing it to a community-based level, and it's called the OWN Institute of Learning, Economic, and Social Studies. Now, keep it in mind, I don't have a degree in economics, and I didn't go to college and university, thank God for that, because the best one is the self-educated one. So it don't take a rocket science to figure it out. But we're going to be coming out with a curriculum we call OWN Institute of Study of Economic and Social Systems, where we can start educate on a community level. Our people need to be educated. I mean, we, you know, Hosea the prophet said, our people are destroyed because of lack of knowledge. And that's what we're trying to do at Diaspora, is to just go. It's not for, you know, self-aggrandizement. It's not for whether I win at this or Queen win at this. We're looking at the betterment and empowerment of a people as a whole. So we have to put aside petty differences, and if you really have the heart of the people in mind, then we must come together and unite and collectively win this thing, man, because our people are a dire strait. I mean, if you saw what I see on a daily basis in the city of St. Louis, oh my God, it would make a brass monkey shed tears. We're in trouble.
Yeah, well,
we have no idea.
I lived in the West End for 25 years, brother. And if you've seen, what I recognize and everything, I lived in that community as a conservative, okay? And it's going to be in my book. I talk about it. So you're talking to someone who understands the devastation that we in as a demographic of people and everything. That's why I've started posting out that we have to learn how to unlearn, to relearn. It was, I'm not trying to take no credit for it, but I saw it, I grabbed it, I saw someone gave it to me, and I saw it, and I immediately started posting it everywhere because I truly believe that we suffer because of the dominant European culture actually is like playing a game of chess. They're not obligated, and I'm going to say this, they're not obligated to show us how to beat them. That is not their responsibility. They are obligated to continue doing what they're doing because we haven't become astute enough to beat them at their game. And I understand that. I'm not mad about that. But we got to learn how to become astute enough to beat this country at its own game. And it starts with implementing new system, new things that is relevant to what is right for us. Not what is right for everybody else, because I recognize that when it's right for us, then everybody else benefits. We got to start doing
things. And you know, the problem
right
that I have with all of that lingo and the problem that I have with that outlook is that when you compare it to bid whist, when you compare it to chess, when you compare it to checkers, whatever it is, all of those are games. And here's the thing. But here's the thing. It's not a game when millions of your people die. Because when you die, it's game over. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
So what I'm saying
but
is
Queen,
that
it is a game.
But no, it's not a game. It's not a game.
Yes, it is.
Because if you look at what they have done to us, then it's not
a, it's
well,
a game.
If it is a game, it's not fair game. Because if you look at what they've done to us and put us at a disadvantage for the sake of winning, then that's not a game either, because that's slaughter. And so you take us out of the game before we even get in the game. We didn't come over in the game, okay?
Now,
we didn't come over here with 50% of it or 20% of it or 1% of it. We came over here not owning any of it, but we built
all
of it.
But we were born into the game.
But
we're born
either way, Michonne, that's not
you.
An argument. What I'm saying is this, is that it may be okay in some analogies to compare it to a game, but when I see people getting buried and they're not even 20 years old, that's not a game to me. When I see that the root of all of it is poverty, it's not a game to me. When I see that the 1% of this country, of this world, is sucking up the wealth and the life out of the lands all over the world, it's not a game to me, because you're using chemical warfare to destroy a people, then you want to break the people, then you want to starve the people. That's not a game.
That's all.
And all of it. All.
When you,
all of it. All so of when, it. Is, all of it. If you look at it all, it's all based around economic and monetary gain.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
But before we get before we go, y'all, I want to acknowledge Dr. Bob Brantley on the line. I know he's been quiet, and I can't see if his hands is up. Dr. Brantley, if you had anything you wanted to say, a comment,
yes, ma'am.
Question,
thank
please
you.
Jump in there. I'm sorry.
I did hit number one, like you suggested. I guess my phone don't work.
No,
but
I guess it don't because I don't see.
Okay, this conversation has been, as always, wonderful, and as always, Gene Gordon is so talented in his way of explaining some very difficult concepts. You know, I'm going to continue to press for him to be recorded in 10 segments or so that we can post those recordings on YouTube, so that the world can review with their families Gene's explanation of these details. But, you know, a brother mentioned a concept that is very simple and that embraces all that we're trying to do. He saw it on a T-shirt, own or be owned. I don't know when or where he saw the T-shirt, but I do know where the term came from, because we chose that term years ago at CESJ as a mantra, and a number of others have been tried, but the truth has always been that we either own or be owned.
Amen.
It seems to me that even our people in our ignorance, and you know the difference between ignorance and stupidity. Ignorance is simply not having information. Stupidity is having the information and not acting on it. So our people are not stupid, but they are missing the information. It seems to me, Gene, that in addition to these details that you so eloquently explain, that we need to hammer the concept of own or be owned. CLDC is a statement of justice. The bill that you got passed in St. Louis is a statement of justice. In fact, it's an act of social justice. And what we need to do, if we don't live long enough to do anything else, Gene, we need to push that bill out to every major city in America, starting with those where our black people are. It'll go to other places as well, as somebody mentioned. Anything that the country comes up with that benefits black people, everybody else jumps on and benefits too. But we need to push that bill to Connecticut, to Washington, state of Washington, to Florida, to Southern California, and everything in between, as a statement of economic justice, in fact, an act of economic justice, and then go about, let our people get fired up. And once they understand that we're slaves, we're not free.
Yes.
We're still slaves. We are economic slaves. We are wage slaves. We are a philanthropy slave. Our people need to get that in their head.
Amen.
Understand. The only way out of being a slave is to own not only where you live, but the roads that go from where you live to where somebody else lives. Citizens need to be owners, and that's the whole idea of the CLDC. It's not a government-owned nonprofit. It is a for-profit, citizen-owned, not only includes the homes, but it includes the very land that the homes are on. Somebody mentioned land earlier, so much land that we've lost. We need to convince this country to take the land back from the British, from the Chinese, and everybody else, the Indians, that are, I'm talking about people in the country of India, own too much land in America. We need to take the land back. Maybe we need another capital rehomesteading act to take our land back. And then that land needs to be owned by the citizens of our country. Every city, every state, every rural community in the state needs to own the land. In addition to that, and I'll shut down here for a minute, as Gene has always said, ownership is about owning the rights to control the produce of a product. It's not owning homes and, you know, cars and assets like that. It's owning the rights to dictate what's going to be produced and what happens to that production. Thanks, Queen, for letting me know.
I just want to say this as I'm listening to this, before Gene and Queen and all y'all came on board, that very statement that Gene said, I heard that statement from Norman Curlin 10 years ago, okay, and he was talking about that, and I got it. Way back then, I got it back then with my, I don't have no education, I have no college, I have anything, but because my military understanding about how a country infiltrate, our country infiltrated our citizens like they infiltrate other countries and take over. They moved our men anyway. Now get it. I heard that with Curlin, which y'all hearing, I heard that 10 years ago, okay, from Dr. Curlin way back then. The only problem was is that when he brought it to me, okay, I was concerned about what was right for us before I go and just work and do it. And I didn't have the articulation, I didn't have the ability to do what Gene has done. And I'm very proud of what Gene has done. And I recognize the importance of it. So I just wanted to let y'all know that Gene is repeating words that he was educated on, okay, but I heard those words 10 years ago, and I didn't know. I heard it, understood it, but I didn't have the ability to put what Gene has put together. So for that, Gene, this is what I've been fighting with my other partners. I give you much props and love for that you have accomplished. And so with that there, thank you, and I appreciate that.
Let me tell you the reason, share with the listeners the reason when I first saw it, the Just Third Way, I said, oh my God, this is it. This is a way out of poverty. This is a way that you can start to resolve the racism, the structural racism, the institutional racism, change of the social and economic systems. And I literally went back to school for the last 5 years because I have seen yet no other vehicle that will begin to solve the dilemmas that's plaguing our communities. You know, when you talk about ownership of infrastructure, you talk about ownership of your communities, you talk about real, as Dr. Brantley mentioned, you know, we have to see, they understand what is the real true meaning of property. We don't understand it. The true meaning of property, they understand the, let me tell you something. While they out there, you know, fascinating themselves with $100 bills, you know, the rich, How do you think Ye was able to go from a billionaire to 400 million? Not that he had a billion in cash. His assets.
Right.
His assets and through his endorsements, his brand would have generated a billion. Now, see, that's a form of, that's real producing property, land, patents, a branded name, that's real assets. The rich black man and woman who are listening does not have their wealth in cash, in fiat cash. parents, you know, it's an asset. So how do we as a people begin to even touch the economic inequalities that we have today? We cry for freedom, justice, and equality. What is equality? It's equal access to ownership, equal access. What is freedom? Freedom is you're free because you're not dependent upon another man for your subsistence. Freedom, what is justice? Justice is an equal balance. It's reciprocity and balance. And what we have to do, you have under the Citizen Land Development Co-op and under the Economic Democracy Act, you're not judged on what color you are. You're not judged on what ethnic background you come from or what's your last name or religion or nothing like that. And see, what DOS for ESJ, and shout out to, I'll be indebted to Dr. Norm Curlin for the rest of my life. I mean, here's a man, 92 years young, who taught me what I know and taught me, of course, when it comes to economic systems, okay? There's other people that I hold a great gratitude for. But this is an opportunity for us to really, really learn the system, learn a system that has kept us down. You know, I'm going to quote the scripture. Isaiah the prophet said, didn't you know there would come a time when your bed will be too narrow and your covers too short? So everything has a time to be revealed, you know, and those of you who are on this call who were instrumental as agents in getting this message out to the right somebody who can go out and teach, but we have to come together collectively. We got a lot of work to do. We can't do it by ourselves. An individual idea and a concept is weak. You know, it takes people. That's what Dr. Martin Luther King did. When Lyndon Johnson said, make me do it, Martin Luther King understood exactly what he was talking about. Go get the people behind it. And we have a valuable case. We're not asking you to give us anything. We're asking you to create
And another
some
thing
money.
That's going to have to happen is that a lot of egos are going to have to be left at the door, because people who run organizations, own businesses,
yeah,
think they've been in this for 20, 30, 40 years. First of all, you have never been in this. That's the first
yeah
thing. So a lot of egos have to be left at the door. It shouldn't be no big eyes and little U's. You
no,
know,
definitely.
The thing that you call a leader, if you had leaders in the African-American community today, you wouldn't be in this situation. So you don't have
yeah
any leaders. You have a lot of people who have platforms and who have something to say, but you don't have any leaders. Because if you had leaders, then what the hell did they lead us into? And why in the hell can't they lead us out of it? So there are no leaders. You have to look for the leadership within. We as the older people, we have to create leaders in our youth. So for this to work, for the black, the brown, the red, the yellow, for this to work for the white, for anyone who is poor and disenfranchised, for people who call themselves something other than an individual, the ego is going to have to be planted at the door as well, because we are all
yeah
trying to get from point A to point B for the betterment of our people, not just in America. Because if you think that we are the only ones, we're not the only ones. And if you want to see what's coming, then just look east. Because that's what's coming.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Queen. I mean, we have to start thinking universal. This is a universal message. This is a universal that will, you know, that just giving you your fundamental human rights. And the most of it all is being put into the law of nature, the nature of God. I mean, that is our right, the sovereignty of God. That is our right. But egos, I mean, I was on Twitter yesterday, and, you know, you can give me your opinion later on, Queen, or Dr. Brantley, or even Michonne. I saw our mayor tweet on Twitter. She said, how do y'all think about a basketball in Forest Park? And I wanted to respond and say, hey, enough sport and play among us. Let's talk about empowerment and ownership and redeveloping our communities. That's what we need to be talking about, not no damn basketball, you know. And besides, Forest Park, see, we spend too much time trying to fit in. Forest Park is, if you look at St. Louis Zoo, St. Louis has got one of the best zoos in America, and it's located in Forest Park. Now, get this. Forest Park is where rich people and well-off people, the WWF, well-off white folks, go and play golf. They have an 18-hole golf course there. So you throw out something about, how about basketball? What is that supposed for us to fit in? Forest Park, you look at Forest Park, which is south of Del Mar. Now come over to Fairground Park, where I grew up as a kid. Come over to O'Fallon Park, where our community is, where we live. It looks nothing like Forest Park. So I wanted to just, I don't like to put people on the spot like that, but, you know, you talking about Forest Park, look at Fairground Park. Look at O'Fallon Park. It looks nothing like that. Create a space for us to enjoy and admire. A space, you know, Forest Park, grass, is, I mean, ponds and Dr. Brantley, if you're on, you know the difference between Forest Park and Fairground and O'Fallon Park. But this is what our leaders, quote-unquote leaders, are talking about. A damn basketball.
And that's why, and they do that comfortably because we don't hold them accountable.
Yeah.
We don't hold them accountable. We're not chastising them about a damn thing. And like I said 2-3 months ago, and I say it again, this last Black Panther movie, billions and billions of dollars spent on a damn movie. They got together in buses, in cars, on the bus. They walked together in chains, Wakanda forever, walking down the street, waking your ass up after the movie at 12 o'clock at night. But guess what? You can't get 10 of them same people to go to a city council meeting. You can't get 10 of them same people to go to the polls to even vote for somebody to hold somebody accountable. The reason why a lot of us don't hold people accountable because a lot of us didn't vote because we don't give a shit no more. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Now, you want to talk about chess? If you're going to beat them at the game, you got to get in the game. Because beating them at the game ain't even an option if you ain't even in the damn game. So a lot of the politicians that's sitting around here collecting your money, and they are screwing you to the left all the way, and we don't say anything. And that is why you better be careful about who you call a leader. And you better figure out what they leading you to.
Yeah, and that, and that.
I'm still live. So y'all got
Michonne,
me muted.
Hold on a minute. But that's
just hold on a second, Michonne. Press one.
That's the pros. That's the pros of DOS for ESJ is that we were adopted something to where we speak in their language now. We can take this to Congress, to the senator, and to the president and say, look, this is what you must do. You know, Biden said that he owed it to black people for getting him reelected. But we haven't put nothing before him and say, hey, this is what you must do. But yeah, when you talk about political leaders, see, you have to really blame academia and education, the way they've been educated. They're afraid to go against the status quo. But Dr. Brentley is on. He can tell you the difference between Forest Park and O'Fallon. But the sad part about it is that we sit back and do absolutely nothing about
but
this.
But, Gene, this is Brentley.
Go ahead.
Yes, St. Louis, I grew up there. I used to have nice fights in all those parks. And I graduated from O'Fallon High School. But you have done something, Gene, in St. Louis that we've not been able to do anywhere on the planet. When I joined Norm Curlin, I don't know, maybe 30 years ago, as a founding director of CESJ, we knew then what we know now about the bill that you got passed, but we couldn't get it passed anywhere. You got it passed in St. Louis. That bill needs to be passed on to Baltimore, and I intend to do that because we have a black governor now, Wes Moore, governor-elect in Maryland. Your bill is going to get planted in Maryland. It needs to be planted in other places. We can at least spread that because it is a tremendous achievement. That's where we need to start.
And Carolyn Nall, who was on the phone, let me just say this, and Michonne, you can go. Carolyn Nall is out of Bridgeport, Connecticut, and we're planning an event there in April, but she had the U.S. Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut, who is looking and very, very, very interested in the Economic Democracy Act and the law that just got passed here in Missouri, also a state senator who just was elected there in Connecticut. He's looking at it, and he's very, very interested in what we're doing. And then we plan to reach out. We got to get up to the Native American people. You know, we have to get to the Native American people to explain to them and show them, hey, this is a way that you guys can build infrastructure up on the Indian reservations and the Indian land. This is a problem that they have ran into. Now you got people with cryptocurrency who's trying to get that in. So we have to get to them educated, say, no, cryptocurrencies are not a way of solving your problems on the Indian reservation. Because one thing nobody can tell me about when it comes to cryptocurrency, and the number one question is, what's backing it? Nobody can tell me what is it being backed by. You know, that's just like the fiat currency system we're dealing with today. They say it's backed by gold, but it's not. It's backed by government debt. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to say to hear this gentleman that has been with Dr. Curlin for 30 years and to hear him say that he knew and heard and understood this thing back then, but we could not get it passed until Gene. You know, that is a testament, okay, that and I'm only going to relate this because when I heard it 10 years ago, when I heard Dr. Curlin speak it to me, I too went around to all my influential friends that I have here in Louisville, Kentucky, and people that I knew, and Dr. Curlin was talking to every single one of them, and And I'm going to say to the person that's been around 30 years, my frustration was back then is that Dr. Curlin could never speak it in such a language that the demographics of people that I was working with that are very influential, very, very powerful, very in it, that they can understand. And they always got frustrated because the only reason he had their ear was because of me. And it frustrated me. It frustrated me so much and everything. Then I started realizing that's why I became a little, you know, deterred that, you know, something that I understood could not be explained to people that I had a lot of respect for. So, again, I go back to what I said earlier. I didn't know, didn't understand, and I'm appreciative of what you've done, Gene. I understand what you've done. Again, that you've done need to be broken down to the grossly ignorance of our demographics of people so they can understand it. Now, I don't know how long it'll take. I think it's going to take another damn 30 years and everything to get to this, to get to what we need to do, okay? But I just want to acknowledge that the knowledge that Dr. Curley and all of them was solid, and I do believe that our demographics of people is the ones that needs to get it over the red line. And I sent something to you, the red line. There's a red line that people that it's a game, okay, whether you want to accept it or not. It's a damn game that if you don't know how to get across that red line and get people to understand what it is, that you don't get across it and you don't get fit in. I believe, Gene, that you have helped us to get past that red line. But we got still a lot of work to do, so that's all I wanted to add.
Yeah, and that's what Queen and Dr. Brantley, and that's our theme at DOSFI, as Jay said. You know, we got to keep it simple. Keep it simple. We can make things so complex to it become, I mean, and this thing is really, really, really simple. The Economic Democracy Act is simple. The citizen land development, not to take anything from Dr. Curlin and the CESJ team, that's just how they were taught. I mean, Norm went to one of the best law schools in America. He majored in economics and lawyer. Dawn, she majored in English literature. Mike Graney went to, I think, Notre Dame College and CPA. So that's how they were taught. And that's how they do. Not to take anything or say anything negative,
right,
to them,
no,
but
no,
that's
no.
The only way. That's the only way they know. But you at DOSPA ESJ, what we learned is to we meet people where they are, and I come up in the ghetto. I was born in the slums, and what the slums were born in me. I mean, I know what it is. I know how to, you know, and I thank God for that, is to know how to find what a person is interested in, what is their main interest. And you can take the Economic Democracy Act, the CLDC, and really apply it to what their best interest is. I mean, whether it be football, basketball, anything, you know. But Michonne said it is a game, but once the people stand up, the game is over. It's time
right.
For us. We have to stand up. If I'm telling you, they're financing your grandchildren's future, and you don't even know it. Queen said about the $70 billion they sent to Ukraine. Who do you think have to pay for that? That $500 billion.
Right.
They never thought to think where that money's going to come from, who's got to pay for it. I'm telling you, you think it's bad now? And technology and artificial intelligence and robots is replacing human labor, we're headed right back to servitude, slavery. When grandma was catching the bus out to the rich neighborhood to mop floors, to scrub down and wash their clothes, that's all the jobs that are going to be left. I drive trucks, and they got all this new technology, so if you get the following distance, there's a buzzer to go off, you know, real loud buzzer. If somebody's coming up on your right, your blind side, there's these lights.
Right.
But what the truck drivers are too damn dumb to realize is that they're just testing the technology, not for you as a driver. They're just testing the technology for self-driving trucks.
They already
Yeah, they already got them. They're running them down there in the West Coast mostly. But, I mean, this thing is going to get ugly, y'all. And if you care about your grandchildren, which we all do, I mean, we have got to, I'm telling you, enough of sport and play. We got to get down to business. But you can go to our website, DOSFI ESJ, and don't be afraid to hit that donate button. It can be $10, $5, anything, because we're out here fighting you. You know, we're out here fighting for you. This is not an organization that just talks a bunch of rhetoric. We're coming with sound solutions to the problem. But we need your help. We need your support. You know, pick up the phone, call your congresswoman, your senator, your representative, your counsel, and say, hey, y'all need to look at this thing, you know, because this is a way to end poverty. And the key thing is, it's not taking anything from those who already own it. Even the rich will get their dividend share, you know, whether they donate it to a nonprofit or whatever, but it's not taking nothing from anybody who already, and that's a form of redistribution, and we got to get that out of our vocabulary. We have to distribute the wealth. Stop looking at redistribution concepts and ideas. Enough of all that. You know, distribution of wealth. We have to become produced, get into the productive of goods and services. We own no manufacturing companies. We don't produce any. But thank you. I'm going to stop there. Queen, go ahead.
Okay, well, we down to like the last five minutes or so. So this is usually at the point where I ask for our marching order. So, Michonne, I'm going to go ahead and start with you since you're here. Give us some marching orders to go forward with this.
Well, I'm going to give you my marching orders and then see what everybody says about it. Here's my marching orders, okay? I'm going to do what I'm good at. I'm good at bringing people together. I'm good at antagonizing and getting people to think. I'm good at organizing and bringing people together. So my marching order is that I will do my best, okay, through my avenues and the things that I do. And the only way Michonne does it is to bring people to the table to allow you, your team, to do the education. I'm not that person to do the education. I've always said I'm going to stay in my lane, okay? But when someone wins my trust, respect, and confidence by measurable results, okay, then I'm going to bring people to the table and let you do what you do. That's my marching orders.
Well, thank you, Brother Michonne. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. All right, Dr. B.
Yes, ma'am. And I appreciate Brother Michonne's personal marching orders. He can bring people to the table, bring them to this blog, bring them to Dossler ESJ. That is great. We need people to hear and to begin to learn and understand. And Brother Gene is the messenger. The website is the wealth of information. And so that is outstanding. I really appreciate that, and I hope he's able, by the grace of God, to follow through with that. I'm going to sound like a broken record. Somehow we have to get Dean Gordon recorded in such a way that we can post it on YouTube so that people around the world, okay, starting with our own people, the people around the world can hear that you either own or be owned. And the way to do that is to consider the just third way. The way to implement that is to set up a CLDC in your local area. You know, the world needs to hear this. They need to hear that if you don't do it, then you're going to remain a slave, and all your children and grandchildren ahead of you are going to actually be slaves again. They need to hear that, and they need to hear it from Dean. I need to find a way to find the money that Gene needs in order to get that recording done. That's on my heart, And I'm asking God to show me how to do that. And I want to be available as a backup to that process, Kazeen. I know you will too, Queen. But that's my personal marching.
All right. And Brother Gene.
Okay. Yeah, my marching orders is this. I mean, sometimes, the messenger said the shorter distance between two points is a straight line. And I think it's time for us to go straight to the point. Because I sometimes wonder, do we, as a people, do we want better? Do we, it's more than an entitlement. It is an obligation to American government, and particularly the Federal Reserve, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, who were financiers of the slave trade, who took slaves as collateral. They financed the slave trade. And then a people who built this economic powerhouse that it is today and be at the bottom of the social and economic ladder. See, and we as a people, we have to stop being so individualism. We have to get out of ism. We're caught up in ism and individualism with the with DOS for ESJ, and what we're trying to do is based around economic personalism, where each person has an opportunity to become real owners of capital. We cannot, look, I'm telling you people, you have to learn what was to understand what is and to prepare for what's yet to come. Now, the situation that's happening with Ye and all that, he said it's the empowerment of a people. That's all he's saying, and I'm not saying I'm with Ye or not with Ye or nothing like that, but when you talk about justice, I'm with it 1,000%. Here's 7 million people, Jewish people in America, only 7 million. And there's 50 million of us and the population of a people. How can 7 million people rule billion of people? That makes no sense. So let's begin to take a checkup from the neck up. It's time to go to work. I'm telling you, next 5 years, we're going to start seeing some hard economic, in the next year or so. I read in the Washington Post frontline, home ownership, home buying was down 30%, So our marching orders is, come on, join on, let's do this collectively. We can make it happen with the voice of the people. I mean, we can do it. We just got to make the demands. And I think they're fair demands that we're making. Give us equal access to capital ownership. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'm going to close out with this. In the educational system, I've heard even on this platform how there's seems to be an expectation of our people to respond to their condition. But when you've been conditioned to be in a condition, then you don't really know that anything is wrong. And when you have never been empowered and you've been made to believe that you're powerless, you kind of stay there too. So it is our responsibility to empower through education and knowledge to let those people who feel powerless to feel empowered, to let those people that know not to be educated. And when you're trying to re-educate a people, that is the most difficult job that you will ever have in your life. As a teacher, if we individually, collectively, do not come together and get this legislation across the nation, we are going to perish. And I don't mean that we're going to perish, you know, like, oh, we're just going to have some hard times. No, we're going to perish. We're going to die.
Amen.
And so what you now call an African America, a Negro, a Black, or whatever you want to call it, will soon disappear from the earth. Look how many of us there are. Can you imagine us disappearing from the earth?
Yeah.
Because I know the ones in America, they don't want to go back to slavery, so they're going to kill themselves first.
Mm-hmm.
And you say what you're saying is far-fetched, but it's not. I'm so serious, it's not. So there are several things that I want to say as far as going forward. I would like to, number one, direct you to the website, dasfreesj.org, D-A-S, number four, ESJ.org. That's the first thing I want you to do and read. The second thing I want you to do is to grab a young person, grab an old person, grab a neighbor, grab a friend, a girlfriend, a significant other, a side piece, whatever it is you have in your social circle, and have a conversation about their economic situation today. And do they desire change? The third thing I want you to do is that I don't care if it's a city councilman, a mayor, or a mayor pro tem, or the secretary to a city councilman, ask them, call them, ask them, go to a meeting, just go to one meeting in the month of December. Just one. They only going to have two because they're going to break for the rest of the year. Go to a city council meeting and ask them, have you heard or do you know about DOS for ESJ? Put it in their hands. Put it on their minds. Get their attention. Because I'm going to be sending out emails and invites to everybody that I can think of as soon as I get this break I got coming up. Because it has to be done. So I ask you to do it with me. Thank you all for everybody who was on the call. I appreciate your support. And inshallah, or by God's will, we'll be back here next Sunday with some more information and preferably some more new listeners and members. So be careful, be safe, be loved. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Good night, Queen. Thank you.